You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill, and once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, hello, everybody. Good evening, and thank you for joining us on the Americans for Truth Hour. My name is Peter LaBarbera. I'm president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. Our website is americansfortruth.org. That's americansfortruth.org. We are a single-issue group devoted to opposing the powerful homosexual activist, transgender activist movement, and we're actually delighted to have another interview with a frontline warrior. Tonight, we'll be talking with Amy Contrada, who's become a good friend, and she's a stellar activist and writer with Mass Resistance. But before I introduce Amy, I want to talk about our Americans for Truth Academy that we have coming up August 5th to 7th. Actually, August 4th, we'll have a wonderful lecture by a former lesbian named Linda Jernigan. But our AFTA Academy is designed to teach young people and old how to answer the lies and the misinformation that emanates from the homosexual activist movement. It's August 5th to 7th. It's at Carroll Stream. Our office is in Carroll Stream, Illinois, which is west of Chicago. And if you're listening to this and you really want to have a better, get a better hold on how to respond to the homosexual activist movement, you know, all around us are these lies. This is who I am. I was born this way. 10% of the culture is gay. You can't change. Homosexuality is not linked to diseases. These are all myths. Many homosexual acts, of course, do contribute to sexually transmitted diseases, especially among males. This academy is going to be, you will enjoy it. It's a 3-day rigorous academy. We have some wonderful speakers. And our guest today, Amy Contrada, will be a speaker at a future AFTA Academy, Truth Academy. We're hoping to do this to keep these going. Our first one is in August here in Chicago, but we want to do them across the country someday. If you want to find out information about it, just go to americansfortruth.org and hit the AFTA, the Americans for Truth Academy button on the top right of the website. You can sign up right there. We're asking for, this is not an open thing. It's not, if you're opposed to homosexual, if you're opposed to the truth, if you're a pro-homosexual activist, you're not invited to this academy. There are plenty of training places for gay activists to learn how to, fight for their misguided cause. We don't need them disrupting our Truth Academy. But if you're committed to the truth on this issue, you want to get involved in this cultural arena and become part of the lonely army of pro-family activists who are fighting the juggernaut known as the gay rights movement, then sign up for the academy. We're hoping to give scholarships for students, young people. I'm defining that as ages 14 to 25. Hopefully, you'll be able to go free. But adults is $199 for the 3 days. And learn more about it and learn about our speakers. Go to the AFTA website. But I'm delighted to introduce Amy Contrada. Amy, are you on the line?
I am. Thanks for having me on, Pete.
Oh well, thank you, Amy, and thanks for all your fine work. Amy is the director of research at at Mass Resistance, which is a Massachusetts-based pro-family group. They are the most effective pro-family group on the issue of homosexuality in Massachusetts. They do some outstanding work, and Amy herself is responsible for a lot of it. And the reason we're having her on right now is that she's the author of a paper about Elena Kagan, who is Barack Obama's nominee for justice on the Supreme Court. And Amy, before I go on, let's play a clip of Elena Kagan, or actually I think it's Senator Jeff Sessions, talking about Elena Kagan at the recent hearings on Capitol Hill.
I know what happened at Harvard. I know you were an outspoken leader against the military policy. I know you acted without legal authority to reverse Harvard's policy and deny those military equal access to campus until you were threatened by the United States government of loss of federal funds.
You know, I respect and indeed I revere the military. My father was a veteran. One of the great privileges of my time at Harvard Law School was dealing with all these wonderful students that we had who had served in the military and students who wanted to go to the military. And I always tried to make sure that I conveyed my honor for the military, and I always tried to make sure that the military had excellent access to our students.
Well, Amy, I have to get your comment on that, on Elena Kagan revering the military while serving as dean of the Harvard Law School.
Well, I know, I'm sure she's honest about revering her father, but I don't think anything else there was honest. We know from an inside source at the Harvard Law School that this is a very strategically thinking woman, a very... I'm not quite sure how to say it. Disingenuous, you know. She's plotting to cover all angles, so she can meet with the veterans group at Harvard as cover. But I don't think she really respects the current military or currently in effect military policies, such as the banning of homosexuals. Even if she does revere the military, though, Pete, what really bugs me is it's clear that her pro-gay rights agenda is more important to her than anything in this issue of the recruiters at Harvard.
That's what I wanted to get at, Amy. It's this, and your report, which is on the Mass Resistance website, that's massresistance.org, how Elena Kagan helped queer, and it's in quotes, queer Harvard Law School. You are you cover quite well how essentially she revered, what she truly revered was the gay transgender rights code at Harvard, which, as you just stated, she said took precedence over the military recruiting policy. Describe mm-hmm. the totality mm-hmm. of her actions against military recruiters on because of this homosexual issue.
Well, first of all, what she's been saying all along is that she is upholding Harvard University's non-discriminatory policy, which is true. Harvard not only has sexual orientation as a protected class or category of people, but since 2006, they've also added gender identity, which means transgender, cross-dressing, transsexuals. Now, what's actually interesting, not even a footnote, really, is that she... if she were truly upholding Harvard's non-discriminatory policy, she would have demanded not only that homosexuals be allowed to serve in the military, but that transgenders and transsexuals and cross-dressers could serve in the military if, you know, the recruiters are going to come on campus. So it's sort of funny that they don't want to go there, but in fact, the policy at Harvard is really quite extreme. And,
well, before you say they don't want to go there, the homosexual movement is, like Elena Kagan, very strategic, and they understand that right now mm-hmm. pushing transsexuals in the
exactly.
military is sort of, a step too far. So we'll mm-hmm. leave the transgenders
right.
for another day. But right now we're going to push homosexuals, mm-hmm. homosexuals.
But the day will come.
Yes,
yeah, but
the day
getting
will
back
come.
To what she did on campus, she worked hand-in-hand with the Harvard Lambda Group, which is the GLBT, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender activist student group at the law school. One of her very first acts as dean was to attend the GLBT reunion of Harvard Law School alumni. That was in September 2003. And at that reunion, the GLBT radical group Lambda from the law school came and made a presentation. And they said, we got to get the military recruiters off campus. They're discriminatory. They're homophobic. And just a month later, she started her extreme activism hand in hand with them. She was clearly working right with them. There's documentation of emails and conversations she had with them. She led discussions at their forums. She joined their demonstrations against the military. And at one point, I think it was 2006, she actually deputized them to figure out ways to harass the recruiters legally and get
away
with it.
This is after she had lost the case?
Right. This
is
when Harvard basically said, okay, we do have to let the recruiters back on campus or else we're going to lose, you know, the money. And the courts, the Roberts Court, basically said, you know, Solomon Amendment means that you have to let them on campus. You guys lose in your crazy legal argument. Yeah. After that, she was still trying to find ways to encourage the students to demonstrate and harass the recruiters.
So this is a woman who is, and here's the question in my mind, And I don't even know if this was brought up by the senators. Probably not. If she elevated the Harvard gay rights code and trans rights code above the military's right to recruit on campus, what is she going to do when it comes to the gay rights laws on the books? And God help us if there's a federal law that covers the whole country, when those laws come into conflict with our American First Amendment religious right to oppose homosexuality.
Yeah, and there's so many things out there pending. We know that she wants to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act, which allows states to outlaw gay marriage in individual states. She wants to overturn that. We know that she would be behind ENDA.
Explain what ENDA is quickly.
The Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and right now it does not include transgenders, but the transgender activists are pushing very hard for that. And at some point, if they pass it, just protecting sexual orientation in the workplace, you can be sure that eventually the transgenders will be victorious and also be protected. So we know that she will favor that, absolutely.
So we have a good reason to fear for what her vote would mean to our precious liberty and our right to live out our faith creed, or even if you don't have a faith creed, just your moral beliefs, which may include opposition to homosexuality.
Absolutely. And no one, why are they not talking about that? Why did they not bring that up in the hearings? Is it too late to get people to urge the senators to filibuster on such a basis? I mean, I think it's incredibly important what you just brought up, and it never was asked by any senator.
Well, yeah, and I can't, you're probably right that it wasn't, and it needs to be raised now before she's in, and hopefully she won't get in. We're talking to Amy Contrada from Mass Resistance. She's written an excellent report. It's on the Mass Resistance website. We'll be back in a minute. Everybody, my name is Peter LaBarbera. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour, and we're doing an interview with Amy Contrada, who is one of my favorite pro-family activists. Amy is the director of research for Mass Resistance, which is a pro-family group in Massachusetts, the most effective group opposing the homosexual activist cause, if we can call it that. And their website is massresistance.org. Amy is the author, the principal author, who did the research on this wonderful paper called How Elena Kagan Helped Queer Harvard Law School. This is so important because a lot of this information wasn't reported by the media, of course, Amy, who is afraid to tell what Elena Kagan's real record is, right?
Obviously. And it's not only that they don't want to talk about her record, they don't want to talk about the subject in general, as we've discovered, which is why our websites exist. But she's just one of these elitist academics who has just completely bought into the all of these crazy ideas, which once you actually start looking at them, you can't believe that they're serious about it. And
Let me ask you about one of those ideas, because you've sort of gained a specialty in this and following this incredible transgender agenda. Elena Kagan, during her tenure as Dean of Harvard Law School, she promoted not just the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender law, so the idea of homosexuality-based legal concepts grounded in one's adherence to homosexuality. But there was also this idea of transgender law that gained during her tenure. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that? What is transgender law?
Well, one of the things that I'd like to say before we get into the more particular discussion is that I know you know this, but maybe some of your listeners have never actually stopped to think about the fact that sexual orientation is never defined in the law now. All of these non-discrimination codes that exist, whether, you know, at a federal level or at a state level, it's never defined. And transgender law is really not defined, except they've made a very vague, or transgender rights, rather, they've made a vague attempt to do it. On purpose, it's vague. But one thing that is pretty clear, it's up to the individual to determine what gender they are under this under these laws that they're proposing. Right,
so if I want to be a woman tomorrow, my perceived gender identity has changed?
Well, what it really is that it's what's in your mind that counts. It's not how somebody on the outside views you. However, if somebody on the outside views you as a man, which you really are, but you think you're a woman, you would be the one who would get to call the other person discriminatory if they addressed you in the wrong way or if they said no, you can't use a certain restroom, you become the offender. So it's really crazy that we're allowing disturbed individuals who suffer from gender confusion to call the shots under these transgender rights laws that are being proposed, and some states already have them. I think we would be seeing more lawsuits now, except, as you said earlier, these are very strategic thinkers. These activists want to get all their ducks in order before they start really enforcing their statutes. Right now in Massachusetts, we have a major effort going on to pass a transgender rights law, and I think one reason, I didn't mean to become an expert on this bill that's in the Massachusetts legislature, but it's like everything else I've done. Nobody else was doing it, so I figured, how come no one's writing about this and spelling out all the horrible things it will do if it passes? So, you know, one thing led to another. Now, here in Massachusetts, and I'm sure this will eventually be the case if they pass a transgender inclusive ENDA, at the federal level, right. What they're going to do is say that if you discriminate in a public accommodation, you could be guilty, you could be fined, you could be imprisoned. The way it's worded in Massachusetts, what they're trying to pass, whoever makes any distinction, discrimination, or restriction on account of gender identity or expression in a public place, public accommodation, or whoever aids or incites such distinction or restriction shall be punished by fine or imprisonment or both. Now, you got to think of what the scenario might be there, a public accommodation. Let's say you want to be on a sidewalk or a library, and you want to have a meeting about overturning the transgender rights law that was recently passed. Well, those are public places, public accommodations, and you could be charged with inciting discrimination because you're saying that the law should be overturned. That means you're discriminating against somebody who's transgender. I mean, it's just insane.
Well, what's the danger is that I see, and this applies to the whole LGBT cause, is it's criminalizing belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to equate Christians who believe the Bible, and the Bible is very clear that homosexual practice is wrong, or people against transgenderism, or an Orthodox Jew who believes that gay marriage is blasphemous. It wants to equate that with vile, racist bigotry.
Mm-hmm.
That's ultimately what the agenda is.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes us back to Kagan. She was obviously so strongly believing her gay rights code that she was willing to even risk further criticism and possibly, you know, a filibuster down the road. I believe she probably wanted to be Supreme Court nominee, and yet she still, took on the military. So strong was her belief in the sexual orientation law. Now, what's going to happen when this woman is called upon to evaluate a case in which a Christian comes up against a gay rights law, as we saw in New Mexico, and you've seen in Massachusetts. New Mexico, we have the case of the Christian photographer who was asked to shoot pictures at a lesbian commitment ceremony, and she said no, and she was sued by the lesbians, and she was sued under the Human Rights Code, which was a sexual orientation code in New Mexico. So, Amy, I mean, I got to believe that this woman represents a direct threat through her vote, if she gets in, to our freedom of religion, our freedom of speech, First Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. But what's even scarier, it's not just these transgender or homosexual issues, but I'm sure everybody remembers Justice Scalia's comment back in his dissent on Lawrence versus Texas back in 2003. That was the Supreme Court ruling that basically said sodomy's okay, and we cannot have laws against sodomy in this country. Well, he warned of the slippery slope. He said, okay, this is the end of any kind of moral understanding in our country, because it's not just going to be about sodomy, but soon, you know, if that's okay, gay marriage is okay, polygamy is okay, sadomasochism is going to be okay, you know, you name it, legalized prostitution, age of consent, sexual consent for children, all of those issues are going to come up. And what we know, you and I, Pete, and I guess anyone who's read a bit about this, is that all of these gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender activist groups, including the student group that she supported at Harvard, including the Harvard Gay and Lesbian Caucus, whose event she was an important participant in back in 2008, I guess it was, all of those groups have a very radical agenda that goes way beyond gay marriage and transgender rights. They also, as you know, Professor Feldblum, who's a friend of Kagan's from Harvard Law School.
That's Kai Feldblum. Okay.
Yeah, from Georgetown, who's now in the Obama administration. She's advocating polygamy, legalized polygamy. We know that many of the gay groups and at all the gay pride parades, there's a big push to openly demonstrate sadomasochism, but they also hand out all of their pamphlets and say, you know, we got to legalize this. Kinky sex, all of this stuff, it's all great stuff. So I think she's going down that road. I mean, she's definitely on that slippery slope. No one wanted to ask her about any of those things. They might have asked her, what do you think of your friend Professor Feldblum's advocacy of polygamy? But they didn't.
Or they could have asked her, right, or they could have asked her about Feldblum talking about the zero-sum contest, the zero-sum game between gay rights and religious freedom. And
yeah.
And she was quoted as saying, Bob Knight heard this, a pro-family guy who we've interviewed on this show. You know, she said basically her understanding in most of the cases is gays win, Christians lose. In other words, gay rights, this newfangled concept, it's what, about 30 years old? I mean, how old is gay rights? Under 50 years old, the idea of rights based on homosexuality, that transcends our historic American religious freedom. I mean, that is so wrong, and yet you're absolutely right. That's what they're building toward, and when you see homosexual activists acclaim decisions like the recent Supreme Court decision, which basically said a Christian campus group has to allow, you know, even a homosexual as a leader, even if the group is believes homosexuality is wrong. I mean, what is that if not the abrogation of rights and our conscience, our freedom of conscience?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've already seen Europe's a little bit further along, actually imprisoning pastors who speak out against homosexuality. So this is not fear-mongering. This stuff is really going to happen, especially if she's in the court. But another thing I think they should have looked at in the hearings, and of course they didn't, it's just like with Obama and his friendship with Bill Ayers and his Reverend Wright connection. What they needed to do with Kagan, I think, was look at the legal scholars that she's been really, really close to, such as Feldblum, but there's a couple people at Harvard, one of whom she promoted to a very important named professorship. And the other fellow she brought in from UCLA, both of them are into this queer GLBT scholarship and really pushing the envelope on this whole issue.
And now one of them is one of those William Rubenstein?
That's William Rubenstein. Yeah, we got a lot about him in the report. And I actually discovered the speech that he gave at that first in the nation GLBT alumni reunion at Harvard Law School.
I'm going to ask you to go into that, but first we got a break coming up. But and we can't use the word that he used in describing what his newest project was, right?
No, and in fact, some people think that we shouldn't even have that spelled out in our report. But we figure, you know, we just cut and pasted it off of his original document. So.
Yeah, and what we're talking about is we're trying to show the real agenda of these characters. And now we have one, Elena Kagan, who's on the verge of becoming a justice on the Supreme Court for potentially 30 or more years. This is Peter LaBarbera with Americans for Truth Hour. Our website is americansfortruth.org. We'll be back in a minute with Amy Contrada.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your tax-deductible gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
We're talking to Amy Contrada of Mass Resistance. Amy's written a wonderful report on Elena Kagan and her radical homosexual pro-transsexual agenda as Dean of Harvard Law School. We have a short clip here to play about Elena Kagan from the hearings.
I loved what happened in the Bork hearings. I wrote a review of Stephen Carter's book recently where I said, no, he has it all wrong. The Bork hearings were great. The Bork hearings were educational. The Bork hearings were the best thing that ever happened to constitutional democracy.
Well, gosh, maybe Elena can say that because she knows that she's not going to be treated one-tenth as harshly as Robert Bork. And, oh, my goodness, it just...
Well, of course, she's also just refusing to answer every question.
Yes.
Charles Grassley tried to get her to say something about gay marriage, and she refused. I mean, she's,
yeah.
You know, she's getting off so easily.
It just bothers me so much because Bork deserves to be in the place that she might be. And I think this treatment that Republicans, I mean, they're asking some tough questions, but let's face it, they're not going to get to the bottom of who this woman is. The media has not reported on the things that Amy Contrada, a simple researcher for a pro-family group, not making hardly any money, to doing this work because you're so committed to the cause. You've already uncovered a lot of things that the media will never have reported about Kagan.
I was listening to your introduction to your show, and the woman says, everyday persons on the front line. Well, that's all I am. I'm just an everyday person on the front line doing something that I see needs to be. Well, one reason I've done this, Pete, is because I have personal connections to Harvard, which make me angry when I see this horrible stuff going on at Harvard. I spent a lot of my working life there. I've got family connections, people who went there. It's just, it's very disturbing to me, and I look at, let me back up a second. She was brought to Harvard to bring in funding, and she was also brought in to change the curriculum, update, modernize the curriculum, they say, and bring in high-powered faculty members.
Well, let's talk about modernizing curriculum.
Curriculum, eliminating the Constitution requirement in the first year law school class. Anyhow, they don't have to study the Constitution, but she did say they have to study international law. That's pretty well known.
Well, that's something that's not even covered too extensively in the report, is the fact that she is an advocate of including international law in American legal considerations, mm-hmm. and that international law is very radical. I think mm-hmm. I just read somewhere that somewhere in the European Union or in Europe, they're now saying that Christian speech is hate speech.
Right. I just read that.
We see these trends all over. And so what does it mean to say that we are going to see mm-hmm. maybe some ruling in Sweden or Great Britain where they're actually arresting Christians who oppose right. homosexuality? We want that to inform mm-hmm. our law here in the United States.
But getting back to her appointments or the people she brought in, she really was extremely central to that whole effort. A dean at a school has a huge amount to say about who the faculty is, the new faculty members that are brought in or those who are promoted. And this one fellow she brought in, named William Rubenstein, was a classmate of hers, class of 1986. Harvard Law School. Class of 86 with her. He was a former activist with ACT UP. He did a lot of work
Amy, ACT UP being a radical homosexual organization which would do direct action protest, even disrupting church services.
Such as throwing condoms around in the cathedral in New York City.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, things like that.
And then you said ACLU.
Yeah, and he worked for the ACLU, and he was an early AIDS activist, separate from the ACT UP issue. But anyhow, he went on to be the director of a queer legal studies institute at UCLA, and he taught, as a visiting professor at Harvard and Yale, queer academics semester course. So he had quite a record in that field. Now, if you look at his official page on the Harvard Law School website, it doesn't make any mention of that. It's very interesting.
Why aren't they proud of that? where's the gay pride?
I'm sure that was one reason she brought him to Harvard. But at any rate, he does teach that issue. His memoir from his college days, that he essentially delivered at a speech at this GLBT reunion that she attended in 2003, Harvard Law School graduates, is very revealing. He said that he didn't expect things to move along quite so quickly as they just had. After all, gay marriage had just been ruled on by the Supreme Court in Massachusetts, and the Lawrence v. Texas case had just occurred at the Supreme Court, overturning sodomy statutes across the country. So he said, so I suddenly had to change the focus of my course, so I decided to add new identities. Those new identities that he was going to discuss in his course included bisexuality, trans, and a word that we can't say, which is gender F, with a few more letters added, as well as discussing, quote, polygamy, S&M, which is sadomasochism, and the sexuality of minors. So those are the topics that he's now including in his sexuality legal studies course. She has another fellow. Well,
before we go on, Amy, on that, I mean, that's just, here again, we're trying to convey how radical queer studies is. And I think, you know, me and you probably have a little bit more idea, but I haven't read a lot of queer studies. And the idea that he's using the F word to describe one of the identities that they're going to study in these homosexual law classes, it's just, you know, it's appalling. And I think if the average American had any inkling of what passes for academic study these days, they'd be appalled.
Well, another professor that she's great buddies with, and you can even listen to her introducing this woman, one of the links on the Senate Judiciary Committee's website of a speech that Kagan gave introducing her and announcing that this woman has been promoted to this super-duper royal professorship at the law school. At any rate...
Who is that?
Her name is Janet Halley, H-A-L-L-E-Y, and she also teaches incredibly bizarre courses, including GLBT family law classes. And
is she the one who says she's a gay man?
And she's the one who identifies herself as a gay man. According to Professor Rubenstein's memoir, which they hoped we would never see. Which, interestingly enough,
what's up with
on the
that?
Harvard website.
Yeah. What's up with this? I mean, is this showing pushing the gender?
You
limits.
Tell me. I mean,
yeah.
I can't understand a lot of this. And that professor, Professor Halley, co-teaches a course, or has co-taught a course, with a transsexual attorney from the a National Transsexual Rights Group.
But you know, I think what I suppose it is, the gay man thing, is, you know, these the idea is that gender does not match biology.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that gender matches biology. But if you're going to teach that gender is socially constructed, then you know that's necessary if you're going to have men who want to walk around in you know, blouses and skirts and wear high heels and put on wigs and makeup and grow hormone.
Stuck in the binary gender mode, Pete.
Yes, I am. I am stuck in that binary gender mode. But I mean, once you, like you said before, this incrementalist agenda. Once you throw off the boundaries, anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
And you see these bizarre identities. You know, I'm an ex-lesbian who now is attracted to gay men. I mean, it's just, you couldn't make this stuff up.
To be honest, even though I've read a lot of this stuff, I don't know what the difference between trans and gender F is anyhow. I don't know. It seems to have some separate meaning. But
well, they all have these specialized meanings, and it's all about, like you said, very aptly, I think, the self-perception. It's all about what the person thinks. You know, I think, therefore I am. And once you get into that realm, I mean, where's reality? You know,
Yeah. You
have a guy like you basically almost passed over it. When you hear of men talking about their right to go to a female restroom, and I know you know a lot about this because they actually include it in their rights, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Because they perceive themselves to be women and they just want to go to the bathroom and they don't feel at home in a men's restroom and then they have to go to the woman's restroom because it's all about me and my transgender rights.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty weird. So talk now, about this a little bit.
Well, in 2006 there was a huge push on the whole Harvard campus, not just the law school but the undergraduate and, you know, they're right next door geographically, and the business school is right across the river. Those campuses are all very close together. The med school may be a little further away, but, I mean, there's a lot of back and forth, and there's a lot of cooperation between the grad schools and the undergraduates. And this was a community, I mean, university-wide push in 2006 was sort of their peak year. She was dean then. She was dean from 2003 to 2009. In 2006, the Trans Task Force had a tremendous victory when they got the administration of Harvard University and the corporation to approve gender identity as being included in the non-discrimination policy. Now, also at that time, as part of that, the health services, of course, couldn't then discriminate. So the whole university, everyone who, you know, has Harvard health coverage, was basically underwriting hormone injections that these confused people would demand.
Okay, so wait a minute.
Now,
she
would have been aware of that. She would have been aware of that.
And
we're talking about Harvard Health Services since 2006.
We're talking about Blue Cross Blue Shield for Harvard employees covering sex change.
And students.
And students, covering sex change operations, but they only cover the top half.
They're doing that since 2010. I mean, that's where this is moving. That's another thing that's that we have to think about. If she is on the Supreme Court, you can be absolutely sure that there will be transgender, transsexual challenges to government health care, being sure that, you know, what they want is going to be covered by it. And how are we going to say no if we have anti-discrimination statutes applying to transgenders? And she's for that. She supports the groups, and these are their demands. So, again, this is incremental. What do they start with? They start for just saying, oh, we just want to be able to use the bathroom that we feel comfortable in. Then they say we want dorm rooms that are gender neutral.
Yes.
Then they say we need hormone treatments. That all happened in 2006 at Harvard.
Wow.
By 2010, they are doing top surgeries.
Yeah, it's just
healthy breasts removed from women.
It's incredible. Taxpayer-funded transsexual operations at Harvard. We'll be right back for our last segment with Amy Contrada of Mass Resistance. Everybody, you're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth. Our website is americansfortruth.org. Check out the Academy, our Truth Academy button. That's August 5th to 7th in Carroll Stream in suburban Chicago. We have some of the prominent, most foremost experts on the homosexual issue and the pro-family cause. We have an ex-lesbian, an ex-homosexual man named, all of a sudden I'm forgetting his name. Greg Quinlan, who's just a wonderful guy who lived in the lifestyle, was actually attending gay activist events, and now he's a pro-family warrior. And one of our future instructors will be Amy Contrada, who we're talking with today. Amy has done yeoman's work on exposing the homosexual activist cause in Boston. She's written extensively on what transgender rights is all about. And I just, before we go off, we've only got 8 minutes left, Amy, but I want to focus in again one more time. Let's get this straight. At Dean Elena Kagan's Harvard, if you are a transsexual and you are getting your body disfigured to match the supposed gender that you think you are, Blue Cross and Blue Shield will be paying for that, and that at least one half, the top half, and they're fighting to have the bottom half covered.
Right.
The implications for us and a Justice Kagan sitting on the Supreme Court is, as you said, as sure as night follows day, you're going to have transgender activists petitioning the government to say, I want my sex change operation covered under Obamacare.
Okay.
You better believe a case like that is going to come before this court.
Let me just tell you, it already has started. GLAAD, Gay Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, here in Massachusetts, that's the legal group that got gay marriage pushed through our corrupt court. GLAAD has already won a case in tax court. The IRS has been forced to recognize sex change surgeries as legitimate medical deduction. Okay? So they're already on that route, and believe me, I'm sure that Kagan is friends with the people at GLAAD. But so it's already happening.
We know she's tight with GLAAD, which is a very powerful homosexual activist group. Tell us about this. But I think more pertinent to this discussion is she was setting up, you know, like something called the LGBT Law Clinic, which was
She believed in clinical experience for the students, that was just as important, and I'm sure it is, as classroom experience, studying books, blah, blah, blah. So they have all these clinics. Again, this is a very hidden one. You have to really search to find it. As far as we can determine, it was set up during her tenure as dean. There's an LGBT law clinic where the students can go. I think it's in their third year, and they get their practical experience working with LGBT clients who are having problems in the court.
Are we talking about gay activist law, basically?
Yeah, gay activist law, exactly. It's run by a gay activist attorney with a major firm here in Boston. Hale and Dorr runs the clinics that this is a sub-clinic within. So, yeah, that's going on, too. Another thing, getting back to the medical coverage for the transgender demands, the person who's really pushing with the Harvard Health Services, the lead transgender activist, is a 2005 graduate of the Harvard Law School. She would have known him because that's exactly when she was there. She began in the fall of 2003. This, I don't even know if it's a man or a woman. This person with a male name graduated in 2005 and was the head of the GLBT activist group at the law school, the Lambda group, that she was working very closely with on blocking the military recruiters.
What is his name or her name? Or
Noah Lewis, I think. It's okay. In my report.
And the report, again, is at massresistance.org.
That's sort of a footnote. But it's indicative of the kind of person we're dealing with. Where do these radical people come from? They're coming out of places like Harvard Law School. That's why help queering Harvard Law School is extremely important because it has such a huge influence on things that are going to affect the whole country, even if they don't right now. Harvard's leading the way.
Yes, and speaking of which, in your report, I think it's on page 5, you have the speech by William Rubenstein, who was brought in to be a professor at Harvard. He's a homosexual activist, and he acclaims another classmate who I guess was a Harvard classmate of his, along with Elena Kagan. Her name is Carol Steiker. He says, quote, who had written her journal note arguing for, quote, heightened scrutiny of classification based on sexual orientation, unquote. Now, here's another thing that the average American would know nothing about, but that heightened scrutiny of sexual orientation as a classification would essentially mean that so-called gay rights would be elevated and have even greater privilege in the law. And the more privilege that homosexual rights, so-called, have in the law, the less freedoms we have, because we're seeing it applied today under these gay rights laws. We're seeing it in foreign countries where they're actually imprisoning or arresting people for opposing homosexuality. Here in the United States, people are being punished and fired for opposing homosexuality. Our good friend Matt Barber, who was fired by Allstate because he opposed he wrote in his own time an article against homosexuality. But what I'm getting at is we have real life implications here of these legal changes that are happening and being encouraged in places like and taught at Harvard Law School.
Mm-hmm. There's another quote in the report that I came across somewhere, which I thought was very telling. It's something that she wrote. Kagan herself wrote. She said, "Our mission at Harvard Law School is not simply to train lawyers. More broadly, we must seek to train leaders, visionary thinkers, and practitioners capable of designing new institutions to meet individual and societal needs."
What new institutions,
Gay marriage?
Yeah, and once you say yes to the new institution of so-called gay marriage, how on earth do you stop it at mm-hmm. polyamorous marriage? I mean, mm-hmm. One of the things the gay activists used to say, or they still say, is, how can you deny a person's love for another person? How can you deny that love? Well, guess what? There are already couples, two guys and two women, and they say they have love. Or a guy wants three wives. We see Muslims who want more than one wife. I mean, once you take away those boundaries.
You've reported on this quite a bit, that the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force is already talking about lowering the age of consent. Various groups like that are pushing for that. There's one other thing. I know you're running out of time.
We got 2 minutes left.
I think that the Harvard Gay and Lesbian Caucus, that's a university-wide organization, covers every graduate school, the undergraduates, employees, professors, staff, everybody at the university. could be a part of this Harvard Gay Lesbian Caucus. She played a prominent role in their 25th anniversary celebration, and that was in 2008. And one of the things that's shocking about that is if you go on their website and look at who it is that they revere, who they've given awards to, and what they support. I mean, they support everything that we've just talked about. I mean, they don't talk about lowering the age of consent or polygamy, but they'll get there sometime, I'm sure. Not quite yet. But they have given awards to Kevin Jennings, the GLSEN founder, who is the Obama Safe Schools czar. And I've done quite a bit of research on that fellow. And that's all on our massresistance.org website. And you, Pete, have revealed a whole bunch of stuff, very frightening stuff, about Frank Kameny. They also gave an achievement award to him.
Yes, Frank Kameny, who's an early gay rights warrior and who recently, Lisa, about a year ago, wrote Americans for Truth, tell us that he thinks bestiality is okay as long as the animal doesn't mind. You know, so I guess we have to learn about how animals would give consent to humans, but that's a whole other story. We're finishing up here with Amy. Amy, thanks so much for this interview. I appreciate all your hard work.
Okay, we're trying.
And Amy is the Director of Research at Mass Resistance. The website there is massresistance.org. She'll also be a permanent faculty member of the Americans for Truth Academy. Learn more about that. It's coming up August 5th to 7th on the website, AmericansForTruth.org. You can go to the button on the right side, Americans for Truth Academy. Please tell young people about that and old people. And go out there and fight for truth. And urge your senator to push for a filibuster of Elena Kagan's nomination to be a justice on the Supreme Court. Thank you so much.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war, people who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.